welcome to another episode of Indie Darlings, the podcast where we discuss films that we consider to be indie darlings. Now, an indie darling can be any film that's obviously indie, but it could be for good or bad reasons. It's just a film that stands out. And today, we are going to discuss the film May from 2002. And our special guest today is the wonderful Mark Rennie.
Hello.
Sorry. Mark, okay, for those of you that don't know, we cool? All right. For those of you that don't know, Mark Rennie is kind of a horror aficionado.
Sure.
And you're also, and so I asked you, can you pick a horror film? And you picked 2002's May. What made you choose this film?
Well, because I knew it was, it's the first one I thought of when I thought of indie horror movie. It's like the first one, it's literally just the first one that popped into my mind. And I used to, I must have seen it like 5-6 times. Like when it first came out, I kept like showing it to people, loving it. And I just, it ended up, I haven't seen it in years. So I thought it might be a fun one to revisit. Because it really made an impression on me the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
And then I hadn't seen it in a long time. So I rewatched it again.
Did you watch it in theaters or?
No, I discovered it on DVD.
Oh.
The burgeoning format in 2002.
Yeah, I haven't seen this. I remember watching it when it first came out, not in theaters, but on DVD.
Yeah.
And I saw it in college. And I remember it very vividly because it just makes a very strong impact on you.
Yeah. And it's not like a typical horror movie either. Mm-mm. Like there's no real horror. Well, until like the last 20 minutes almost, you know,
there's
not
gore.
Like outright. There's gore, but it's not like outright. I don't even know if it's ever scary, but
there's like upsetting. It would be like if Todd Solondz was going to make a horror film.
Yeah. Kind of. Right. Because in a way, the whole, I don't know, are we starting already? Or the whole movie is like, everyone's weird, like May exists in this weird freakish world and she's an outcast from that, you know what I mean? Like the world itself is filled with like gross perverts, like the ride in the elevator. There's always like that weird couple making out. And
oh, the guy making out in the elevator was actually a cameo made by the director.
Oh, I hope that girl was his girlfriend and not just some poor extra.
Okay, so a quick summary of the film. May is about a woman who's very eccentric, very shy, and her name's May, and they show her childhood briefly, and she grows up with a lazy eye that her mother makes her very self-conscious about, and as a result, she has no friends at school, and her mother gives her a doll encased in glass and saying, "This will be your friend now." And you see her grow up and it's still her only friend. And you see May like just starving for human contact and a bunch of horror ensues along the way.
Right. I'd say so. The doll kind of represents almost May's own psyche or stability.
Yeah. Just something like she's trapped in that glass. She's very repressed.
Yes.
And
her mother made the doll.
Mm-hmm. And she wasn't allowed to touch the doll. And what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Okay, so I saw it in college, and then I rewatched it last night. Mm. And thank God I did, because there's so much stuff I got now that I didn't before.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I saw it in college, I remember thinking, okay, so she has a love interest in this movie who is played by Jeremy Sisto, who
Six Feet Under fame.
I was going to say Clueless.
Oh, who was he in Clueless?
He was the Elton.
Oh,
I think so. he's the guy that's like a snobby jerk.
All right. I can see him doing a snobby jerk.
And Jeremy Sisto plays her male love interest. And Anna Faris
stealing the show.
Yeah. I remember this was like right after she did Scream. I'm not Scream, Scary Movie. And I'm like, whoa, this is very different.
She plays a very aggressive lesbian.
Very aggressive lesbian. And I remember when I first watched it, I thought Jeremy Sisto, I'm like, oh, this guy's a jerk. And then I remember thinking Anna Faris, oh, this girl's a jerk. But this time, when I don't know if it's because I'm older, I haven't seen the film in over 10 years.
Yeah.
And so I guess I've aged.
Probably the same for me.
And so now I'm like, oh, these people are just normal.
Well, in a way, like they both like flirting with like dangerous things, and you got to be careful with what you play with, because like he loves like Jeremy Sisto's character is like this dark guy who thinks he's like real, like when he shows her his apartment and he says like, "Do you think you could handle this?" And it's just like, it looks like something you'd see in like a tchotchke shop on Santa Monica Boulevard. It's like gold, you know, he has a typewriter and like a fedora hat that's turned into a lampshade.
Well, Mark, I think you're being a little hard on the guy.
No, but then he shows her like this short film that he's like going to be, it's really disturbing. I don't think you can handle this, but it just turns her on.
Yeah.
So he's like trying to be this guy. Like I'm like, he finds himself really dark and edgy and interesting. But then he meets the real thing.
And he gets freaked out. Yeah.
Well, she does bite him, but she's just reenacting what his movie did.
Okay, so he shows her a short film he made as a student, and in it is a couple on a picnic, and they start to eat each other cannibalistically, very violently.
But it's like all set to like a fun, jaunty, it looks like a very much like a film school film.
Yeah, and its intent is to be horrifying, but May reacts to it like it's the most loving. She calls it sweet.
Yeah.
And her only critique is she wouldn't have been able to bite off his finger in one bite.
Right.
And she kind of tries to reenact it when they make out.
Yeah. And she bites his lip till he bleeds.
But she doesn't just do that. He's like, "I'm bleeding." And she's like, "I know." And then she takes some of his blood and rubs it all over her.
Yeah.
And very clearly, she's trying to recreate the film, but it's just like, you can't kill each other.
I don't think she's trying to kill him. I think she's just...
she has a blood fetish.
She's got maybe a blood body parts interest.
Yeah, because there's a part where she's like, she's kind of jabbing a scalpel into her own thumb.
Right, like a cutter.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, is she depressed or what? But no, I think I was like, watching it now, I'm like, oh, I think she has a blood kind of fetish.
Bloodlust?
Yeah.
She's definitely interested in blood and body parts.
Yeah. Also, she works at a veterinarian's office, and she helps with surgery and stuff. And but the thing, what makes her special, and I guess good at her job, is that nothing makes her squeamish.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
She's got an iron stomach.
Also, sewing is like her thing.
She's very creative.
And as a quirky art student in the early 2000s, I was like, this girl, she's awesome.
I mean, leave it in. There are more girls who make their own clothes in indie films than any other kind of movie.
I think girls in indie films aren't allowed to shop at normal stores.
No, you got to make your own clothes. You got to go to vintage thrift stores. Mm-hmm.
And even when you sew your own clothes, it has to look like you sewed your own clothes.
Right.
Very funny.
Hers were very like patch, like quilty.
Yeah,
almost like the coat of many colors, like Dolly Parton's coat of many colors.
It was almost scarecrow-esque.
Costumey, what'd you say? A little costumey.
Yeah, but I remember thinking when I first saw that, I was like, "Ah, indie film, love it." But now I'm like, "Oh, it's symbolic."
Sure. Well, because her mother says, if you can't find friends, make friends.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing there. It's not quite the quote, but it is something along those lines.
Yeah. That's like a famous quote. Not a famous quote, but it's a quote that gets said throughout. It's famous within this movie.
It's famous to people who've seen this movie.
But to her, this whole aspect of, because they make a lot of references and they show a lot of footage of her like sewing. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's this aspect of Frankenstein there.
Absolutely.
Like the first human that she kills has a Frankenstein tattoo, and she's really drawn to it.
And that guy, I forget his name, but
he's in Donnie Darko.
He's an indie darling. He is truly in every indie movie. I forget his name. He's like in every what you would call it? The guy who did Doom Generation. I don't know what it is.
Oh, yeah, but he has a very distinctive face, and his parts in the movies are small, but they're very distinct. It'll be like, oh, shit, this is a very important role.
Well, he kind of looks like Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, he kind of looks like a Keanu Reeves. And because in Donnie Darko, he plays the pivotal role of the creepy rabbit. And in this one, he plays her first victim. And he also, he physically stands out. He's dressed like a punk rock kid.
Yes.
And the death.
James Duvall. That's his name.
I never would have guessed that was his name.
No. Yes, that's his name. He was in, like, he's in a ton of Greg Araki is the name. Another great indie guy. Queer movies. You seen Greg Araki ever? Any Greg Araki movies? Nowhere. A lot of people being very cool and ironic and great soundtracks and cool visuals.
That sounds familiar.
You should look into Greg Araki.
I might be thinking of Camp Nowhere.
That's very different, I think. Did you find yourself sympathizing with May?
Yes. But then after a while, I'm like, part of you has to know that not everyone's going to be into this.
I don't think, see, I find her very, like, in the world that we're shown, the world she lives in, I find her almost in some ways the most sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Because she just is looking to literally, she's just looking to connect with people, and she's never been shown how.
Yeah.
So when they wrong her, it wounds her deeply. Like, she's like, she makes fast friends.
Well, here's what's so funny. Everyone, like, May is very awkward. She's very quiet. But people seem drawn to her.
Yeah.
Okay. So Anna Faris flirts so hard with her. Like, they're, like, she comes on so crazy hard. And I remember thinking, is this how hard you're supposed to flirt? But it's so intense. But okay, so.
But then you get the sense that Anna Faris, like, flirts, her character flirts with everybody.
Everybody,
like,
yes, like yes, yes.
But to Maya, it made her feel special and unique.
Yeah. Okay, so Jeremy Sisto's character, he ends up kind of dumping May.
I think this was like maybe the first instance of ghosting.
And what
I can recall.
What sucks is that she shows up to his house and she accidentally overhears him say to his roommate that he dumped her and he's glad to be rid of her. And this is like nightmare scenario. And then so she finally relents to Anna Faris. And but then Anna Faris, I think I would define her as polyamorous.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. What were you thinking?
No, that I would think a free spirit.
Yeah, because she goes to Anna Faris.
She's not
looking
to be tied down.
Yeah, like she goes to Anna Faris's house and she sees her with another girl, and she's like, "You know, you're still my number one."
Right.
A weird thing that I just noticed is both times when the people that she's connected with are with their new person, they treat them terribly.
Right.
What's that about?
I think it just shows like kind of a way of like who they really are.
Huh. Because they're usually very nice to May, but when they're with their other person, like, okay, so Jeremy Sisto, he calls his new girl like he tells her to shut up and stupid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then Anna Faris, when the other girl's like, "Hey, who's at the door, babe?" She's like, "Shut up, whore." And I'm just like,
well, that to me felt more affectionate. You've never told a good friend, "Shut up, whore." I didn't get malice from it.
I'm like, they clearly don't care about this other person. They clearly cared about May, but that something just, I don't know. It was a weird little common thing that they both had.
Mm-hmm.
So I was reading the Wikipedia about this, and thank God I did, because there was something I didn't notice.
What was that?
Okay, so Halloween happens in this movie, and everyone's dressed up, and I didn't notice that May is, okay, so.
Wearing the costume that the doll wears?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I didn't even notice.
Well, she has become, that person has been, the doll has been unleashed. And can we talk about the scene with the blind children?
Oh, God. I have a question.
That scene is wild. These kids are so eager to get this doll in a glass case. They are literally crawling through broken glass and they're still getting to it.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so May decides, she sees a group of blind children at the park. Mm. She decides to go volunteer at their daycare.
Which, no screening at this daycare. They let anybody in to interact with the children.
Yeah. And like, they could not give a shit.
Right.
So she goes in and she feels connected to this one blind girl who's like kind of a loner. And so she decides to bring in her doll to, I guess, help them.
It's like show and tell, something to talk about.
Yeah, but the thing is, they're blind and the doll is behind glass.
Yes.
And this scene, watching it now, I'm like, this is bonkers.
It's maybe the most bonkers scene in the movie. And
like, I think
it just
so.
At least, it's wild. I'm very glad it's in there, though.
If I was on set that day, I would have been like, why are the kids doing this? Because the kids basically grab the doll out of, they even when May's like, no. Like they grab the doll out of her arms.
They're very aggressive.
Yeah, they're very aggressive.
Blind children, known for their aggressiveness.
These blind children grab the doll and it shatters on the floor. And they're like, they don't know what's inside it.
No.
They just know that May's friend is inside it. So it could be anything. It could be an ant farm.
That's a leap, but yeah.
But it was just like, and glass shatters everywhere. They're like, get it. Get what? They don't know. And they're crawling over glass. Blood is everywhere.
Right.
The teachers are just in the back looking horrified.
Right. But I like a scene in a horror movie that isn't just like an outright murder scene or something. But I like a scene in a horror movie that's like, oh, that's upsetting. But like no one's dying, but it's still awful. Like it's a different kind of, you don't have to go to like slashing throats in horror. You know what I mean? Like There's something more that's just, I like that because it felt, I don't know, I've never seen that before. And I haven't seen anything like that since, where blind children crawling through shards of glass.
I had trouble justifying it this time.
Yeah, I don't know if it's justified, but I'm fine with it. I like that it happened.
I feel like there could have been.
I'm not pro hurting blind children, by the way. I'm just like, oh, that's a horrific thing, and I'm glad I've never seen that before.
I was like, all of a sudden, these group of blind kids are an angry mob, and I was like, what?
Well, I mean, if you're a blind child, you might have a chip on your shoulder.
I suppose I don't know. Anyway. So this, May is horrified by this.
And she gets glass in her eye.
Oh, that's right.
She's like scratching her eye.
Yeah, and she scratches at it brutally. And she scratches at it till blood comes out.
Mm.
Ooh.
Any eye stuff is always creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Eye and teeth stuff.
Sure. Fingernails.
Fingernails. Anything that's close to a nerve ending, it's going to really get you. Okay, so her friend... Her doll's name is Susie, and so Susie kind of gets broken when she's taken out of that, when she falls out of that glass thing.
Yeah.
And it's then, I think, she decides to become Susie.
Or the Susie in her is unleashed.
Yes, yes. Did she kill the cat by then?
The cat was the first to die.
Yeah. The cat, yeah, everyone's killed out of malice, including the cat Loopy.
Right. Well, what was the cat doing? Something that she...
Oh, yeah. Well, because I think this was right after the glass incident.
Mm-hmm.
She's really upset. She's at home and she wants the cat to cuddle with her.
Oh, right.
And she's like, come on, Loopy. It's been a bad day. And the cat hisses at her.
Right. She just wants a friend. May just wants a friend and everyone's being an asshole.
Yeah. And so she takes this giant ashtray that the blind child made for her and chucks it at the cat. And the cat shatters. And
then she keeps it around for a few days, spraying it with like Febreze.
Yeah. Well, she's like spraying it with stuff, still petting it, holding it, eventually putting it in the freezer, which gets found by the punk rock kid.
Yes. James Duval.
Yes. The formidable James Duval. And here's my thing. He opens her freezer, sees a frozen cat, and is like, you're a fucking freak. And I'm like, you're the one that went home with someone you found on a bus stop.
Those are equal to you? This is before cell phones. You had to meet people any way you could.
On a bus stop?
What's wrong with meeting at a bus stop? What's better, like a coffee shop? What's the difference?
I don't know.
You're meeting a person. He's a punk rocker with a Frankenstein tattoo. She's an odd, quirky girl. Of course they hit it off. What's not to like? That's equal to like finding a cat in a fridge?
Well, she could have
They're
explained
equally
it.
Weird to you?
She could have explained it somehow.
How do you explain a cat mid-shriek frozen in your freezer?
Maybe she was on a taxidermy. I don't know. But I was just like, judgy much? And so she freaks.
So you think anyone who meets cute at a bus stop is a fucking freak?
I say if you meet someone at a bus stop and you go home with them right away, I'm like, you better open up your mind a little bit more.
Well, you're getting to Ubers every second. You're not, you know, those people aren't screened.
True.
So,
well, I use Lyft. Mark.
Well, same thing. Same idea. They're all the same. Everyone has two stickers. No one just does one.
Anyway. Okay. So all of the deaths in this movie are very horrific. She kills the punk rock kid whose name in the movie is blank.
I think so, yeah. Very punk rock.
And she stabs him with a pair of sewing scissors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know how you would define this. He tries to block the scissors, but she ends up going through both hands and into his forehead.
Yes.
That's a lot of strength.
I mean, sure. But I mean, if you're avoiding bones in the hand, you'd probably be all right.
I mean, and what's crazy is it turns out May is very good at killing.
She's wiry.
And she's good at what she do. And
she's good at what she do.
What's so interesting is that, like, once she decides that she's going to start killing, her shyness disappears.
Right. Well, she's now like this, that Susie. She is now blossomed into, like, almost like her true primal self is out.
Yeah. She's like, she is no longer the prey. She is now the predator.
Right.
And so she's literally... because she compliments people on various body parts.
Yeah, she loves Anna Faris's neck. She loves Jeremy Sisto's hands.
Mm-hmm. And blank, she loved his chest. And then
Anna Faris's friend's leg, gams.
Yeah, stems, whatever.
And then what was Jeremy Sisto's girlfriend? Did she like anything of hers? Her ears?
So.
Didn't she compliment like her earrings?
I don't remember that.
Oh.
But I... okay, so she... Yeah, she literally measures Anna Faris's neck.
Yes.
With the intent to kill.
This is when it becomes true Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. She measures her neck, and then, like, she just very boldly shows up to her place. And, she kills her. I don't know.
It's off screen, that one.
Anna Faris?
The death, yeah. You see her, like, grab a knife, and then it cuts to later when the friend's showing over and Anna Faris's legs are on the floor.
No, you see her throat get cut.
Oh, maybe they flash back then later.
No, because, like, Anna Faris is sitting at May's legs, and she's like, please don't hurt me. And May doesn't hesitate and just, with two scalpels, like, kind of scissoring at her throat, just slices. Yeah.
I feel like May is very, like, she sees the world black and white. You know what I mean? Like, she can't handle, she's not a fan of nuance. So if you've wronged her in any way, you are completely dead to her.
Yeah.
And, like, she expects perfection in a way because her mother expected perfection. Like, she says at the beginning of the movie, I wish you could just take parts of people and not the bad parts, just the good parts.
Yeah.
But everyone has good and bad parts. You know what I mean? But she's been taught, like, hide your flaws.
Yeah.
Ignore that. So there is, like, perfection is possible and an ideal. So she's still striving for that.
Yeah, and her mother, okay, so I was looking at this movie online, and through various accounts, they think that the mother was abusive. I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well,
she's definitely emotionally abusive.
Yeah, because there's a part where you see May opening her birthday present as a kid, and she's peeling the paper off, and there's a part...
doing it incorrectly somehow.
Yeah. Her mom's like, well, now it's ruined.
Like, how was she supposed to open the paper?
Yeah, I was like...
I think there's no pleasing this mother.
Yeah, like, she's like, how do you incorrectly open a present?
I guess maybe she wanted to reuse the paper, don't rip it.
Oh, that's so funny. So she kills Anna Faris, and then she kills... I forget her girlfriend's name. It doesn't matter. She's wearing... she has long legs.
It's Halloween.
And she's wearing go-go boots.
Yeah.
Which I remember back at that period of time, 2002, those were coming back.
It was like little post-swingers kind of thing.
Yeah, a la Spice Girls, Austin Powers.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, I remember that. And so the way she kills her, I thought was interesting. Like, she straight up stabs her in the head.
Yes.
And I'm just like, wow, she's really going. Also, she must be so strong to break through the skull like that.
I mean, you don't question when Michael Myers does it.
Well, Michael Myers has a big knife.
Patriarchy.
Has a big knife. She has a little scalpel.
I mean, scalpels, they use them in surgery.
And she's so tiny.
I mean, she's got wiry strength. Why not?
She's got quirky girl strength.
Yeah, quirky girl strength.
And I think in the same night, she goes to
She's got a busy night. Dragging a cooler around.
Yeah. She goes to her ex's place. And she... Oh, man. When she's in predator mode, she just gets what she wants.
She knows what she wants.
Like, because, I thought it was interesting. Her ex, he's dressed in like Julius Caesar garb.
Yeah.
And at first I thought, oh, they're not going to show his death, but they do in like mm-hmm. flashbacks.
Yeah.
And he gets, I think, stabbed from the front.
I think so.
Like very Julius Caesar style.
Mm, et tu, Brute.
Yeah. Et tu, Mae.
Et tu, Mae.
And, well, first he kills her new, she kills her new girlfriend.
Yes.
With a scalpel to the throat.
Jeremy Sisto's reaction is a very good reaction. Very yeah. believable.
Yeah. It's like horror and shock.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of shock. I remember thinking, watching it the second time around, like, I'm like, Jeremy, you're really good at this.
He is good in this.
Yeah.
You got to watch him in 6 feet under. He's great.
I always get overwhelmed when I have to like tackle a brand new show. That's
you don't have
has
to,
like
really.
9 seasons on it. Although I've heard good things about it. But yeah, I don't know. I felt sympathy towards the other people, but I guess.
Well, it's always upsetting to see people murdered, but you also understand why May's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you, her murder comes from a genuine place. You know what I mean? It comes yeah. from a relatable. We've all felt the way she's felt. We uh-huh. haven't. We don't all react the way she does, but we've all felt like slighted or wronged or like less
yeah.
than.
Yeah.
You know. So I feel like that her murdering comes from a place of vulnerability, as opposed to your typical slashers where they're just like
yeah.
you had sex, I was, you know, wronged as a child, and then yeah. now you did, you personally did nothing to me, but
yeah,
I'm gonna kill you anyways. So I like that. Maybe it's also because she's like a female killer, like her killing comes from a more real grounded place.
Yeah. And she's like just unbearably lonely. And okay, so she has all her body parts, she puts together this she sews fabric together into the body because
mm-hmm.
the body doesn't have a head.
No, she uses like the material from the doll as like the head.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
She calls it Amy.
Yeah. Oh, well, she literally has tile letters mm-hmm. that spell out May, and she rearranges them to say Amy. And I'm like, ooh, that's interesting. And oh, did you notice that the hair of the new Frankenstein friend was the fur of the cat?
Oh, that's cute. Repurposing.
Yes, it's very cute, Mark.
Flipping. Like it's a flea market flip.
It's know? Very cute.
You know, you make the most of the materials you have.
Yeah, and so she wants her creature to come to life, and of course it's not. And she wants it to see her. And this part I found very moving because she's like, she just wants to be noticed.
Wants to be seen.
Mm-hmm. And so she gouges out her lazy eye.
Mm-hmm. The one she was so proud to have fixed.
Yeah. And then gives it to the creature, and then the creature comes to life.
It works.
Yeah, and starts caressing her. And on Wikipedia, it says that she fatally stabs her eye out.
I mean, it's unclear, I would say.
I'm like, I don't know that much about anatomy, but like, I don't know if that's a fatal wound.
Could be, I don't know. I think it's left open-ended. I don't think it's...
Well, it ends with a little bit of magical realism. A
little bit. You know, I think in the end, because ultimately you need to see yourself. And that's what May does.
Yeah.
You know, you have to look inside yourself. You have to, like, you know, look within.
Uh-huh.
Or also, and maybe you need to, she needed to give.
Yeah.
To get.
Yeah, it was like her own little offering.
Yeah.
And
isn't that a way what we all need to do to find connection?
Well, also, there's a lot of foreshadowing in this movie. Okay, so her friend Susie's behind a glass case, but throughout the film, the case is starting to crack,
mm-hmm.
and you hear the glass crack,
mm-hmm.
even when it's not.
Yes.
So I guess that's supposed to be...
her sanity.
Her sanity breaking to hear the glass. Oh, also she hears Susie talk to her.
Sure, we don't.
Yeah, we don't hear what she's saying, but it seems to be upsetting May.
Sure. Susie's got a lot of questions.
Yeah. Well, apparently Susie also showed her how to kiss.
Right, which, okay.
Yeah.
There were no lipstick stains on that glass.
But she, it doesn't go well.
And how does Susie know? I would not trust any advice Susie gave me.
I'm like, Susie, you've been in a glass case.
Yeah, you haven't been in, you haven't been to a nightclub.
Yeah, you don't even watch movies, Susie. What are you talking about?
Susie is a good bad friend.
There's a lot of moments in this film that I just genuinely enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is with Jeremy Sisto and May, where they first go into his room and she finds this knife
The gag knife.
She doesn't know it's a gag knife.
Right.
And then he stabs her with it. She doesn't know it's one of those retractable knives. And she just doesn't flinch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that should have been
a red flag, would you say?
Yeah. And then he shows her that it's a retractable knife. And then she shoves it into her heart with his hands. And I'm like, that's kind of beautiful.
She's intense.
Yeah. But it's like beautiful to her.
Right.
But I'm like, also, boy, red flag.
But like in a rom-com, this would be like her like planning to meet him. Like she knows like his walk and his schedule. And like she conveniently runs into him at the laundromat. Like in a rom-com, this is just cute behavior.
Yeah.
But you change the tone slightly with the same events. It's upsetting.
Yeah. And this is a minor part, but I just noticed it this time in the beginning. You see her eating and she's eating a chili dog, a very messy chili dog. I thought, I don't know why, but I really appreciated that.
Really? What made you appreciate the chili? Do you like chili dogs?
I do. But here's the thing. Whenever you see people eating in movies, it's always like the least messy food you could think of.
Right.
Especially if it's a woman eating it and she's eating it.
It's like a bowl of ice cubes or something.
Like she's eating a chili dog with chips and a drink. And I'm like, I don't know what that was supposed to symbolize, like her awkwardness or.
I don't know. What did it symbolize to you?
Well, to me, it showed that she's unpolished.
She's unpretentious, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe in some ways, like still kind of a kid.
Yeah.
She's been living like a sheltered life.
Yeah.
Because that is like a kid thing to want, like a chili dog.
Yeah, and then when she makes him dinner.
Although I would love a chili dog.
I always in the mood for a chili dog. When she makes him dinner, she has wine glasses, but she pours orange Gatorade into them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's...
And her mother seems very refined, though, when we see her.
Yeah, so...
So it did not get passed down. I feel like there's another movie in there about what happened to this mother. Where is this mother now?
Well, apparently, I was reading about it, that her childhood sequence was actually a lot longer originally.
Sure.
But they... When they originally screened it, they're like, oh, it's taking too long to get to the meat of the movie.
Right.
So they shortened it substantially.
I wonder what it
entailed. I would love to see what it was.
Right.
Because I'm like, okay, she has a mom and a dad, but the May that you see now, I'm like.
I got the sense that dad was like a mom's boyfriend.
Yeah. But I'm like, there's no way the mom is stopping by that apartment.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm just like, what? I feel like something happened to the mom.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know. A lot of questions. But sometimes it's nice to have questions in movies, not have every single little thing answered.
True, true, true.
And how about that Breeder song?
I Shazammed so much throughout this movie.
It's got a good sound. That's a very indie soundtrack it has.
It is a very of the time soundtrack. There's a lot
but
of.
But even at the time, that Breeder song was like 5 or 6 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's like 95.
The Breeders have a very distinct sound that I.
Breeders are great. Last Splash is one of the greatest albums of the 90s.
I highly appreciated the music in this movie. Even like the music that I was playing over the credits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. A lot of love went into this movie.
It's got a really unique tone.
Yeah.
I still can't think of another movie that's quite like this.
Because it's also, there's like darkly comedic moments.
Absolutely.
Because she keeps running into this couple in the elevator that's making out and glaring at her for being there.
Yeah.
But then the last time she sees them, she's covered in blood in the elevator and they see her and they're like, ew, never mind. I won't have what she's having.
It's just like a weird world because there's also a scene where like a guy comes into the veterinarian office, like his dog's missing a leg. He doesn't know where it went.
Yeah.
So the whole world is kind of just a little off
in
this world. And then there's another scene. Anna Faris is talking to this woman who's just drinking a Sprite, can of Sprite, never responding with a word and just keeps like. Cooling herself off with this Sprite, and it's never explained. We never see this woman again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just little touches like that just make it feel like the whole world is a little off.
Yeah, yeah.
And so in some ways, May is in a lot of ways the most relatable in some ways.
Yeah, because I remember having this distinct moment. I'm like, we are seeing the world through May's eyes. She is...
And it's a bizarre world.
Yeah, the world is strange, and I'm like, but I can also tell that we're supposed to be able to relate to May.
Yes.
And I'm like, it's interesting that they made this crazy character so relatable.
Right. I mean, just make someone lonely. There's nothing more relatable than that.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's lonely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if people liked this movie, Mark, what other movies would you recommend?
Oh my God. Goodnight Mommy. Maybe. That's very different.
It's very
but
different.
It's another like slow burn,
yeah,
that pays off in like the last 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
With maybe sympathetic or unsympathetic protagonists.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to, I don't know what else. There's another great, this is from the 60s, Joan Crawford in Straitjacket. It's a William Castle movie. Another woman driven to madness.
It's called Straitjacket?
Yeah, starring Joan Crawford.
Ooh.
Like, she's been released in it. She's like released from a sanitarium because she went there for, accused of like murdering her husband with an axe.
Mm-hmm.
But now she goes back to live with her daughter and her new husband. And there's a great scene where Joan Crawford gets real drunk and very aggressively hits on her daughter's fiance. It's a delightful movie. So I would recommend Goodnight Mommy, very upsetting French torture-y movie, and then Straitjacket, which is a 1960s camp, which actually does have genuinely creepy moments in it.
I thought Goodnight Mommy was Austrian.
Probably. It's somewhere. It's European. I don't know, Connie. I just read the subtitles.
I remember they were, there's a scene where the boys wear Crocs, and I appreciated that.
Sure. That's why you love Mario Batali.
He wears Crocs. The orange ones.
He's also a Me Too'd.
Oh, yeah. That's not the Crocs' fault. I would recommend, if you're a fan of the lead actress in this movie, Angela Bettis. I originally saw her in the movie Girl Interrupted.
Oh.
Where she plays one of the patients in an asylum, in a psych ward that Winona Ryder's character and Angelina Jolie's breakout role are staying at. And she's very good.
I've never seen that movie.
What?
I know, and I love psych wards.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I need to watch it. Is that based on a true story?
It was based on a memoir.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I recommend also reading the memoir because they're different and it's interesting to see what characters they kept, what changes they made, because they made some changes. Angela Bettis, I thought she was really good in this. Also, like, she just, the girl's got range. She's a very different character in Girl Interrupted. Mm. She's very, she's an anorexic patient who's also clearly a ballerina, but she's not shy or meek at all. She's very abrasive. She curses at people.
Fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think she's great.
Every film she's in, I feel like she just stands the fuck out.
Yeah. Well, she's so odd and unique and you can't help but watch her.
I think I saw her on some sort of crime show where she played a heroin addict.
Sure.
Yeah. But she just always stands out. I was trying to look to see if the director, Lucky McGee, had done anything else noteworthy. I think this might be his most famous film.
I think so, when all said is done.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a few follow-up things, I think, maybe a few like,
this is
TV
definitely,
ones.
Yeah, this is definitely not his last project, but no. I think it. If you're going to Google him, this is probably going to come up first.
Yes.
But yeah, I think this is definitely an indie darling. It's very watchable.
Great soundtrack. Great look at a pre-gentrified Silver Lake in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, yeah, there's a lot of exterior shots of Silver Lake. A lot of them, the scene, are they still there? Does it still look like that?
I think parts of it do. The coffee table's gone. Coffee table was great. Uh-huh. It was on Rowena.
It looked cool.
It was like you get good sandwiches, coffee, a lot of tables, ample seating, a patio, shade.
It's shade.
Gone now. Now it's some yoga studio, I think.
Oh, everything's a yoga studio now. I really enjoy this movie. I've seen it a couple of times now, and I highly recommend seeing it more than once because you just notice more. Also, seeing in this movie as a 20-year-old versus seeing it as a 33-year-old is just like, whoa. Because I thought that I remembered it very vividly, but I was like, I'm just going to rewatch it as a refresher.
Right.
And thank God I did because I was like, oh, I think I related to May much more when I was younger.
Oh, really? See, I related to her more now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, this girl's just trying to find love and you dicks keep getting in her way. But now I'm like, May, that's their journey. And you just gotta let them go, May.
Sure.
Yeah. So I don't. Yeah. Something. Oh, it's fascinating read on me.
You can't control. You've learned it. You can't control other people.
Well, also just like things aren't so black and white.
There's nuance.
Yeah. And you really do have to learn how to have relationships.
Yes.
Good life lessons. There's a lot of good quotes in this movie, too. There's a part where they're talking about movies. And when she first meets that Jeremy Sisto guy, he's like, I'm going to go see Trauma. She's like, what's that? And, and he goes, you've never seen Trauma? And there's like a beat. And I'm like, ooh, I see you, movie. Okay. We're coming towards the end of our podcast, Mark.
Yes.
This is coming out in October.
Wow.
Is there anything you'd like to plug?
I don't know what I'm going to have in October, but you can always check out a web series I did. It's all up. It's called All Access Avery. You can check it. It's on YouTube. Mm. Fire Your Die. It's on Amazon Prime. It's 5 episodes. They're all like 2 minutes each.
That's 10 minutes, guys.
Nothing. So check that out.
Awesome. Awesome. And you still... Is this a monthly show, Magnificent Moms, or
no? Just yearly. So maybe there'll be another.
Oh, it's yearly.
Yeah. So maybe 5 months from October, that'll be out. I don't know.
Fantastico. Yeah, I love talking to you about movies. You always have the best recommendations.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you liked what you heard, you can rate and review on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions or recommendations for an indie film or an indie darling, email us at indiedarlingspodcast@gmail.com. You could also hit us up on Instagram and Twitter at indiedarlingpodcast. Thank you and good night.
Hey, Rachel, Oscar.
Yeah, Claire?
Do you love Disney movies?
Uh-huh.
Have you seen them all?
Not all of them.
What do you guys think if we watch them all in chronological order and then talk about them?
Ooh. Oh, and what if we could talk about it with some of our favorite friends?
I love that.
Yeah, and what if we do it inside the Disney Vault?
You know, that's the name of our podcast, Inside the Disney Vault on Campfire Media.
Yeah, check us out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to yours.
That's Inside the Disney Vault.
Let's go. Woo!
Campfire.